Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Hi, it's Zoe, and today we are here with Ailea Buffier, who is an extraordinary woman, and we actually discovered we run parallel lives. So we ski at the same place out of Gathaga in the Snowy Mountains, and we have a similar passion for bushwalking. And just this weekend, we found ourselves in the very same coastal place, which is no, it's hard to do actually in Australia to end up in the same place. So apart from having these intersecting lives, Ailea actually runs a successful commercial furniture business and has done so for the last 14 years. And she represents a number of huge suppliers, including Steelcase, the world's largest commercial furniture manufacturer. She purchased 9to5 Interiors in 2003 and founded 9to5 Sustainability in 2005. So through these two companies, Ailea and her teams assist businesses in lowering their environmental footprint and delivering on their aspirations by creating workplaces that engage and inspire. She's also on the board of directors at the Australian Institute of Company Directors, so she's got very strong business head about her. So one of the reasons there's a couple of reasons why I'm so excited to bring Ailea to the conversation on the podcast is this notion of sustainability and how we can build better business practices with that, and also how furniture and interior design can assist or detract from creating workplaces and workplace cultures that are engaged or not engaged. And that connection between space and furniture is a pretty critical one. And I reckon it's one of those hidden barriers that keeps teams from being boundless. So we're going to explore some of these ideas today. So welcome, Ailea.
Thank you, Zoe. Excited to be here.
Good on you. So tell me, I think it's fascinating, your story. So you bought a furniture business, then you developed a sustainability business. You're on the company director's board. Tell us a little bit about your professional leadership journey.
Well, I thought I wanted to learn about business, and so I thought I would jump right in. At 20 years old, I bought my business, and I'd invested in some property from the age of 17, which was how I got the capital required to do that.
Oh my God, you're like the most together person I've ever met. Investing in property at 17? Yeah. What the?
Yeah. So I had four residential properties before I was 20. So
what?
I got in at exactly the right time and they all skyrocketed in value, which was exciting.
Oh, I just paused for a second. I didn't know this about you. So how did that happen? Did you have a strong financial mentor in your life, or were you just completely savvy from the outset?
My parents were all getting into it around the same time, and I went to a few conferences, and then the first home buyers grant came out, and I used that to buy the first two places, and then the rent from one of them, but the mortgage repayments for both of them. And so then I renovated the one, and then that went up in value, and then bought another two. And so I claim to have retired before I started working, because my passive income covered all my living expenses before I even left school.
Holy crap.
That's my little claim to fame.
That's no
and
small.
And I've never spent above my passive income.
Wow. Okay, we can just stop the podcast now. I'm amazed already.
My passion that I sort of, developed as I was leaving school was around helping businesses move towards an environmentally sustainable future. And so that was sort of the impetus for buying the business to start with. And I'd been reading a lot of books like Natural Capitalism and Cradle to Cradle. And so the business that I bought, 9to5 Interiors, which was then called Canberra Contract Furniture, then being the dealer for Steelcase, or then Hayworth and now Steelcase, was featured really heavily in those books. So it was a way to learn about business and be involved in those amazing companies, which was really exciting.
Wow. God, that's just amazing vision. So let's just backtrack a little bit. The two books, Natural Capitalism and Cradle to Cradle, those two are the main ones that you've – okay. And so you read about Steelcase, and that sort of led you into the idea of maybe working in furniture to work with those kinds of companies. Is that, did I capture that correctly?
Yeah, definitely. So it's the passion of moving business towards sustainability, but a way that they demonstrated in natural capitalism and cradle to cradle was, you know, the power of the supply chain and and, you know, how to integrate, you know, sustainability into all areas of business. And so it sort of just, it was exciting to be involved in that. And then I sort of took it further with the other business, the sustainability business, which was more purely the sustainability part.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about that particular business.
Well, I invested in a company called Carbon Planet in 2005. And so it had a suite of services that I was sort of the dealer for then. And then I did some other courses called SCORE, which is the sustainability assessment tools and things like that, that that were just a suite of services and the green building assessment star ratings and that sort of thing. So the Green Building Council of Australia courses. So I was sort of helping the property industry, but also sort of any sector business measure their footprint, benchmark it, reduce their emissions, that type of thing. And then that developed in conjunction with Carbon Planet, which I was an investor in, and they expanded quite rapidly, but then sadly shrunk quite rapidly after the repeal of the carbon price in Australia as well.
So, because obviously there wasn't a huge imperative to follow through on that without the support of that kind of legislation. So, but there's still an interest and in being sustainable in terms of reducing carbon emissions and the footprint on the planet. What kinds of businesses are interested in that, on developing that level of responsibility in their business? Like who is attracted to that? What's their profile generally?
I think it's all business, really. Like, and if they're not, they should be, because the research is showing that you know, investors are taking that seriously now, and it should be a part of every business decision and every type of business. The people that are getting left out are the smaller businesses. So large business has really geared up to speed and are measuring you know, sustainability metrics and that type of thing. But my next focus is sort of that next level down, which is the people that don't have, you know, internal teams or can't employ the big four consulting firms to kind of help them, and focus on those companies that are getting a bit left out but still have a lot of, you know, potential to reduce their carbon footprint.
And so what are your suggestions for those folks?
I'm trying to make it easier, because I went through the whole process with 925 Interiors of footprinting the business and, you know, doing everything we could to reduce and buying green power and offsetting and all that sort of stuff. And it was quite a costly experience. It was sort of over, you know, $2,000 for the assessment, and I was in the industry, so I, you know, knew that was a good price and that was what you should be paying for. But for a small business, that was still a big chunk of money. And in terms of the returns you get on that, other than the feel-good factor, it wasn't a lot. So and it was a big process to go through as well. It took months of data collection and that type of thing. So I'm trying to sort of make that easier and take the you know, arduous, costly factors out of it, and just make it something that can be, you know, embedded into everything they do that can make it more effortless.
Okay, well, that's great, because there's plenty of passionate business people who would love to do the right thing and then get stopped, as you say, because of the limitations of finances. Because 2K is a lot in a small business. You know, it's like, do I pay my staff? Yeah. Do I invest in my marketing to get new business, or do I do this side thing, which is a long-term benefit but not an immediate one? So that's great.
Yeah, and it'd be much better if that was invested in new light globes and other energy efficiency measures, other than just getting the assessment done.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So this idea, so we've gone from higher level sustainability principles, which in itself is really attractive and engaging for staff, I think, because a lot of the research around employee engagement says that employees really want to work for organizations that are purpose-driven, values-based, and sustainability it's a key benefit and a key value, which should be a key benefit and value for all of us. So it's an attractive proposition for people. So coming back to your specific work around furniture, though, and what you put in your bio about creating workplaces that engage and inspire, how do you do that through your work?
I think you need to start with two things. One, like you said, the purpose of the organization, but then two is designing for the individual. So taking the time to figure out how they think as people, because the workplace has sort of changed to where creativity is not sort of an optional extra or the realm of the interior designers and graphic designers. It's a business imperative now. So asking questions of the employees of, what type of problem solver you are and where you do your deepest thinking are sort of some of the ways to start to unpack the requirements of your individual staff. And then you can sort of create the workplaces around your, business purpose and how your people work. And that really helps to sort of lift the engagement and develop the skills and places they need to express their authentic self and create alignment with that purpose.
Wow. Okay. So I captured one of them. So asking employees what is their deepest thinking? And there was another one that you mentioned in terms of profiling the individual workers. What was that one?
Asking them what type of problem solver they think they are.
Oh, what kinds of problem solvers are there?
I'm not sure of all the details on that. They've got a whole sort of Steelcase have a list of questionnaires that can go out to sort of help people unpack these problems. So it's not kind of your standard, four criteria. It's like a whole matrix, and they actually have these cool little badges and stuff that give a visual picture of what type of problem solver you are. But it's a complex analysis.
Wow. Okay. I never really thought of that as being part of understanding how people show up at work is what kind of problem solving they did, but it totally makes sense. And when you ask people what kind of, where you do your deepest thinking, is there a range of answers to that? Like what kinds of things do people answer?
A lot of it comes back to nature. So I think incorporating, plants and things inside the environment and having good access to views and vista and outside light and that type of thing, that's all really important to feel that sort of relaxed connection and quiet spaces. So there's a lot of, buzz about open plan offices and how horrible they are to work in because you can never get that quiet space. So having time to sort of go and sit somewhere quietly and recharge and not be interrupted, I think all those things are really important.
So yeah, I think that's an interesting point that we've had some pushback on that open plan concept, it was meant to dismantle hierarchy and to build collaboration and creative thinking. And as you said, there's been some sort of people are saying, actually, I can't concentrate, I can't do my deep thinking. So is there like a balance between the two where, because I get a sense that open space sharing piece is important. I could be wrong. You can tell me. And that quiet, reflective, focused type of space. So tell me about what you've seen your work around that.
Well, Steelcase has done a lot of research. They are a massive company, and they've developed a what they call the ecosystem of spaces, and it's designed around having a palette of spaces that you can go to, which have a variety of movement. So posture, which is a variety of movement, and they can sort of move around and sit in different positions and lounge and stand and all that sort of thing. and then a variety of presents, which is more like the digital and analog, physical and virtual. And they those spaces allow interactions with teams, and as well as, you know, a couple of colleagues sitting together, and they could be, you know, a couple of colleagues on the other side of the world at the moment. So we've got a lot of distributed teams and working across globally in different time zones and all that sort of thing. And then the option of privacy, so either focus or rejuvenation. So having places to be able to go as well as interact. So it's sort of that having the variety of spaces is what's really important to create that ecosystem, which is what you really need in all areas of the work environment.
I love that concept, ecosystem of spaces. That's really super cool. And it makes sense too, because gone are the days where, well, sitting in cubicle land is not natural, is it? Like, it's sort of taking the factory concept where we stand in a line and just produce stuff and applying it to the office space. And Cubicle Nation has just been, I walk into some of those spaces these days and it's like, oh my God, it's so depressing.
Yeah, pretty soul destroying, and you're just about to think of something amazing and then someone interrupts you and you take 20 minutes to get back to where you were.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I know you sent me a little bit of stuff on Steelcase, and one of the things that they do is, so their ecosystem of spaces is one of their design principles. And the other one was designing for physical, cognitive, and emotional well-being. So tell me how they do that, like physical, emotional, and cognitive well-being. What does that look like?
Yeah, so it's sort of the intersection of all three that's where the well-being sits.
Okay. Yep.
So physical, just being healthier, which is really the only one that's been considered in traditional offices, which is, you know, getting up and moving, healthy postures, you know, good ergonomic chair and staying comfortable and energized. That's really, really the only one people have given any thought to. But the other two are cognitive and emotional. So just thinking better. And that's where the rejuvenation spaces and the thinking spaces and quiet spaces come into it. But also, you know, team building spaces and places that, you know, two people can go and nut out an idea together. So it's sort of having those spaces that make you be able to do your best thinking. And then the emotional, which comes back to the sort of nature in the workplace and bringing a sense of belonging and connection between the people in the organisation, but also the organisation itself. So, you know, how to make them feel included and that they're happy being there. So physical, cognitive and emotional are kind of the intersection of those is what you should aim for to create a full holistic well-being of the individual in your organisation, which ultimately leads to benefits of the whole organisation.
Absolutely. So if people are feeling well, mentally, physically and emotionally, then they could bring their whole selves to work and feel like they're achieving and they're being successful and they're in a place where they belong. Totally makes sense to me. So a question, like, this sounds fabulous if you have very deep pockets and you can start from scratch and you can design it perfectly from scratch. What about organizations that don't necessarily have a lot of money? Can you take existing buildings and play with what they've got to create some of this stuff? What's your experience with that?
Totally. And all this is showing that that you can potentially reduce your footprint by 50%. And, you know, obviously a building that you don't build is the cheapest one and the most environmentally friendly. And people aren't – the status symbol nowadays doesn't revolve around the corner office. It revolves around what Steelcase have found is that it revolves around choice and control, and that's becoming the new status symbol for today's workers. So they don't want the big office where they're isolated from the team, that they have to sit in it all day and stay there until 8 o'clock at night to be seen to doing anything. They want to be able to, you know, work at home, work at the cafe, work in a lounge and still be seen to be productive and valued as a part of the organisation. So it's not a big cost thing, really. It's just about designing well, and I believe that with everything you do, that it doesn't necessarily have to cost more. It's just about putting the thought into it and designing well from the start that gives you the best outcome.
That is so cool. I love that. I had no idea that that's really new concept for me, that status is no longer about the corner office, but about choice and control. That's really cool insight. Yeah. And so this idea of reducing your footprint by 50%, so not building a building, so not dump like bulldozing and reconstructing. So what do you mean? Was there something else apart from not doing that that would reduce your footprint by 50%?
Well, it's the fact that having the choice and control means you don't necessarily have to give everyone the desk. Everyone doesn't have to have a big footprint in a big office. It's they can have small desks, and then they can have a lounge area, and then they have a breakout area. And so most people aren't at work all day, every day, and there's lots of people on leave and holidays, and, you know, so having unidentified space can be an answer to reduce that down and give you that flexibility to reduce cost and size and all that sort of thing. So it doesn't work for every organisation, but getting it right for that organisation can unlock huge potential to reduce the floor plate.
Okay, so I get it now. So reducing floor space can reduce your footprint as well. Got it now.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I love that it doesn't have to cost an arm and leg to do that. How does your furniture fit into this design? I'm curious about that.
Well, I think furniture really defines the space. It tells you what you're going to do in it. So, you know, the building doesn't change much, but we sort of believe that place matters, and the way that people have been working has changed dramatically over the last 10, 25 years. It's all extremely different, and that thing that's changing is the furniture. Creating spaces and elements of nature and all the new advanced technology that we're now integrating into furniture. Like every, you know, couch you sit on nowadays has a power and data plug to be able to plug your computer into, and you've got, you know, rooms with video conferencing and virtual reality, and it's pretty amazing what you can do, and I would consider all that furniture. I don't know whether you count the nature as furniture, but I do. it's all the creating the spaces and finding where people can work best, and that really does come down to the furniture.
That's really cool. So have you got many clients who are using virtual reality in their offices?
Yeah, definitely. We've done a lot with a few big government departments, which I'm not allowed to name, but they have offices all around Australia, and we have sort of video conferencing facilities where they can share screens, and, you know, everyone can throw up their screen of their computer so they can actually get that real collaboration between, you know, different teams, instead of just having a video conference where one person has control of what everyone sees and everyone just looks. It's much more participatory and inclusive, so you can sort of start to break down those physical barriers between locations. And Steelcase, for example, they had a wormhole live video feed constantly in their office, so that in Sydney they had, you know, a team of 20 people, and then in Kuala Lumpur they had a team of 50 people, and then they collaborated those teams together so that, you know, they could isolate, you know, in Kuala Lumpur they would do all the pricing and drawing, and then the Sydney team would be more of the consultancy part of it, and they just work seamlessly together even though they're in different time zones and continents.
Oh, that's so cool. Awesome. Mm. So, you know, I have to ask about this because it's a hot topic also, like when it comes to furniture and the standing desk, the you know, can you put your desk up to standing or sitting, walking desk, cycling desk. I've even seen like reclining desks. Have you seen those where people recline in their chair and they've got
a computer? Oh, yeah, we have lots of them.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Totally, we sell them. They're great.
Can people actually do that? Yeah. So they're lying like they're in a lounge recliner and their computer is sort of at eye level, but tilted with you. Yeah. It's like a dentist chair with a thing in front of you.
It's not something you would do 24 hours a day, like, or, you know, 8 hours a day. It's having that choice so you can go from one place to the other, and you might sit in it for an hour when you just need to focus and not be distracted, and that gives you that visual prompt of, you know, I'm in a little booth and I don't want to be distracted.
Right.
And that's where it's really valuable. And it's the same for, you know, well, the cycling desks and walking desks, it's sort of where you put them, but it might be like a recharge timeout space in a room where you just want to go and, you know, sit on the treadmill and read some reports or something like that, and you don't want to be interrupted. It's sort of that visual break, but it's none of those ones are something that you would ever use full time. It's if you're in a big organization and you have that variety, then it's fun to go and use them. But the stand-up desks, though, I think that's well, it is becoming standard across, you know, all the new fit outs that we're doing. The big sort of hype line at the moment is sitting is the new smoking, mm-hmm. Because we're all living such extremely sedentary lifestyles, and just a little bit of standing up each day can do so much health-wise, and you lose, you know, 50 calories an hour just by standing versus sitting.
Hee-haw.
And that is, yeah. And it's once again not something you can do all the time. That's why the sitting versus standing is so important, just to be able to move effortlessly between the two. So I think that's a really important trend. The rest are, you know, nice to have, but the sitting standing option is a really valuable one. And there's a lot of new technology at the moment that's coming out, which can link your desk to your phone or computer, so you can be going to any desk. You just, you know, plug your computer in or sync your phone to it, and it will automatically tell you if you're meeting your standing goals for that day and if it's time to stand up or sit down, and, you know what height you like your desk at, and just you click OK on your phone and it automatically takes the desk to your height you want, and then you can, you know, click another button and it takes it back up to standing height, and it's all adjusted specifically for you so that you don't have, you know, one tall person and one short person all trying to stand at different heights. And, yeah, it's really amazing what they can do now with the technology integration to the desks.
That's really cool. So you have a team of everybody has their app on their phone, and they just move around to that particular desk, key in, and the desk goes bzz, 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 and sorts it out. We have that facility in our car, actually. You can program in each driver's preferences. So it's the similar thing, I guess. This is the advent of Internet of Things, really. So that connectivity.
Exactly.
Highly personalized.
Yep.
I have a standing desk, and I've had it for a couple of years, and I just love it. I think it's great. It's adjustable too. So you do have, this is the misnomer with standing desks, I think, is people think that you just stand in the one place all day, and that's actually not true at all. So
it's about movement. You just have to keep moving.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. I loved the fact that you pointed out all these sort of different spaces and for different type of thinking. Lately, because the weather's improving, because I have a home office, I sort of work all over the place in my home. And last week I took a coaching call outside in my garden, and I sat in the sun. It was just lovely, and the birds were going off. And so I sat speaking, highly focused with my client, which was all good until my phone overheated in the sun.
Oh, no.
And I had to go inside. So that is one risk. I'm like, oh, I need to manage that better next time. But
it was probably really relaxing for the people listening to you to hear the birds chirping in the background and everything like that, sort of a bit of more nature integration.
It was, except for the baby magpie. That was not so relaxing. That was more like, I had to go shoo it away. But other birds were much better. Okay. So coming back to this idea of employee engagement and workplace environment, I mean, it seems to me like if you design for variety and keeping these things in place, you know, cognitive, emotional, and physical well-being, it seems like an obvious leap towards employee engagement. Is that your experience in the businesses that you've worked with? Like, you fix the space and people are automatically more engaged, or is there something else in the mix? What do you think?
It is, but it's that constant adjustment and reassessment. So you might have put, you know, a little meeting booth a little bit too far away and people aren't using it, or the space isn't quite working the way you wanted it to and you're not getting that level of engagement. So I think it's really important to continue the process after you move into a new space to say, are you getting the engagement, and is everyone happy, and are they thinking the way they want to, and have they got the space to go to? and then constantly adjusting that and tweaking it. And that could change for the same organization over a year. Like, it might be great when you move in and then, you know, things change and you need to keep adjusting it. So I think it's that sort of constant awareness of how your people are going with wellbeing, and then how the space can enhance that and maximize it. So just being aware of it and just doing regular check-ins to make sure it's all still working.
I think that's a useful principle across the whole idea around culture as well. Yeah. So it's not just the physical space. It's all about touch points and tribe development, that sense of community. Those aspects, I think, also contribute to healthy culture and engagement. And just like monitoring space use and whether it's working or not, you have to monitor those things too. So that constant monitoring and adjustment.
Not something you just pick off and say, done.
Yeah, that's right. culture plan, done. Yeah. It's organic. When it's people leave and people arrive and they've got a new work style, then people have to adjust around that. It's a constantly shifting thing. So I think that's a useful comment to make, you know, that it's not just you do your renovations and it's done and, you know, people are fixed and now engaged. I think good leadership is about paying attention to those health signals or lack of health signals and being able to adjust accordingly. Yeah. I love this concept of space being supportive of employee engagement, employee performance, staff engagement and staff belonging, that sense of inspiration and deep work. I think it's one of the most profound things that we can do in terms of, as leaders, creating environments that create outstanding results for people, or so that people can have outstanding results for themselves in it. And it's actually, this whole idea of environmental design is something I learned about as a broad concept about 15 years ago from Thomas Leonard, who was the founder of Coach Phil and Coach You. And he had this concept, and I'm curious just to flag it with you as my last question for you. He had this concept of, well, things are always evolving or adapting to their space. And as humans, we actually have the capacity to craft environments that can cause our evolution. So whereas other animals just respond to their environment and evolve that way, so polar bears have white fur so they can be camouflaged and warm, as an example, or chameleons have that capacity to shift their coloring to adapt to their environment, humans can actually create their environment and evolve with it. So what do you think about that? Do you think that how we're designing spaces and our use of furniture is causing human evolution?
I don't know about the whole evolution, but I'm definitely a firm believer in you create your space and then your space creates you. So I just built a new house and I feel like I'm now, you know, the best person I can be, whereas before my old house was sort of bringing me down and suffocating me. And so I think that's so true in your own home, but also in office environments, that it really does bring you up or pull you down and you can, you know, you can work with that and get the most out of the space to get the most out of you.
That's fabulous. I love that. You create your space creates you. What a fabulous way to end our podcast. Ayla, you are amazing, and I love your contributions, and I think you're just a remarkable business person and a lovely person. So thank you so much for coming on the call. It's been fabulous.
My pleasure. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you.